Good morning, church. Good to be here again. Thank you for the invitation. It's good to be a grandpa, isn't it? I mean, who here is a grandparent? I bet there are a few. I thought of my grandmother when I was listening to that song, and I want to thank you for that song. It's so wonderful to follow a choir after they sing an incredible piece. My middle name is Thomas, and I come by that honestly. Which means I question everything and deeply. And a word that I really kick around now and again in my mind is the word why. It's a challenging question. Sometimes it puts people on the defensive, but why is a huge question. And I remember my grandmother some years ago when I was but maybe 7 or 8 or 9, and I would pose to her questions about why. She's a woman who came here from Italy at the turn of the last century. And my grandfather and she just lived outside of Hartford, Connecticut, and they were to be in a small Catholic church and began a small life together. And your song kind of made me think of her because she would be sitting here smiling and her eyes would be closed, she'd be worshiping as you were leading the congregation today. I used to have a phrase that I would give anything at all to really hear her say, and that was, "Gary, you may go to my purse. You may get a nickel. You may walk to the corner store and buy yourself a popsicle." I would do anything to hear those words, and I heard them normally after I would do a chore for her. Pick acorns out of the yard. Go to the garden and pick carrots. And one day I went to her purse, and I got her wallet when she said, "You may go to my purse, get a nickel, walk to the corner store and buy yourself a popsicle." And I noticed something I hadn't seen before. Her purse was filled, as many women's purses are, and her wallet was this thick. And it wasn't full of money, it was full of pictures of me, my sister, my mother, my father, my aunt, my uncle, my cousins, her family. And she would look at these pictures now and again and just be very thankful for these. And I went to her purse, and I opened up this picture section of her wallet, and I noticed something I hadn't seen before that kind of ticked me off. And that's the question, why? She was a devout woman of faith in the Catholic tradition, and in the front of the wallet in the family section was a depiction of Jesus. And I was rather bold at that stage of time, and I walked up to her and said, "Grammy, why is his picture there before mine?" Never underestimate the words you will share with a child when you answer a question. I was 8 or 9, and those words live with me today. I had no clue what they meant at that time. I had no idea. But she sat me down. She was 5'2" and slender, and she put her little hands on my cheeks, and she said, "Gary, if I didn't have Jesus, I wouldn't have you." I had no clue what that meant. I grabbed my nickel and ran. But those words have been in my head for a long time. And over the years, I watched them live the life that they lived, and it wasn't easy. My aunt died at age 39 to cancer. My grandmother found my grandfather in the basement where he died of a heart attack. She had 27 major surgeries before she died. Life was not easy, but still she could say, "All that I have is a gift from God. Everything I have is a gift." And I saw them live the life they loved to live, which was making people smile every day. In everything they did, every course of the day, to the best of their ability, they would try and glorify God, and they had a passion for the church. They had a passion for their small little Catholic church, no larger than this building right here, in a small town in Avon, Connecticut, and they would do everything they could to live those values. So these words she shared with me have stuck with me for a long time. The question is why. I have questions about why also, and I'm looking for that booklet. Here it is. I hope you're proud of this. This awesome piece in the Moravian Magazine about Ephraim. It evokes all kinds of why questions when I read it. By the way, is Diane here? I think she is. Yeah. Awesome writing, thank you. And I have one question for you in a moment. It's a why question, okay, so get ready. right? And the look on her face is precious. I mean, this is pretty great stuff, and you can teach old dogs new tricks. You've done that, haven't you? You've learned deeply, but I looked in this for the reasons about why you have done what you did, why you are working on this book called Percentage Living, why you listened to three messages about devotion, about generosity, and about service. And the whys are kind of in here. And Pastor Dawn had a lot to do with it. You use the word inertia. That's a real wonderful word. What did you mean by inertia? You got over inertia. Yep. Yep. Always something else. Yes. Yep. Super. So what your pa- and I know Dawn pretty well. We've been friends for a long time. I know her gentle nature, but she can I mean, you can have folk move off the dime, can't you? All right, you've been standing on this dime for too long, church. Let's do something about this now and get this thing built. So you did it. You did it marvelously well. So you're the church of the open door. Your church is accessible. You needed accessibility, and you feel good about that. But those are shallow why questions and answers. It's a whole lot more than accessibility needs, and you had a pastor who finally said, let's do it. Let's get off the dime and do something about this. It's deeper, and I want to have you think deeply today. Deeply, as to the real reasons of why you do what you do as a church. I love to go to Caribbean congregations in the Moravian tradition because when I go there, I hear them say something. The pastor says, any lay reader says, they say, good morning, church. Always good morning, church, and they never let that go. They remind each other all the time what it means to be the church. But today my task is to challenge you a little bit, and I want to have you leave with one thought, only one. You can forget anything else, any other story. I want to have you walking home, and as you walk, watch kickoff at 12 o'clock or 12:30-ish after lunch, I want to have you think about this one sentence I'll give you later on. One thought to walk out the door with as you think about this concept of Ephraim Church. And much has to do with the depth of my challenge and the thought about this answer to why behind it all, if you will, coming textually from Matthew's gospel. If I may tell you the story of what happened in Matthew's gospel that led up to what the lay reader said. Thank you for your reading, by the way. Awesome. You're a good reader. You're great. Thank you. Jesus is in Capernaum, a city on the north shore of Lake Galilee. And Jesus is there with his disciples being very busy. I mean, he's the hit of the town. People are coming in droves. He teaches with authority, touches, he heals. And people said, we need to get close to this guy. And the city is just overwhelmed in many ways with people coming because Jesus is there. And the text says, before you get to this section that was read, that Jesus had fed 5,000 people. Must have taken some time and some energy and some thought. It wasn't just a simple thing. He fed 5,000 people. It also says in the text just before this that he silenced the Sadducees and the Pharisees. That's like silencing the senators and representatives in Washington. That's hard to do. They have thoughts and ideas and convictions, and they wanted to be the first to let Jesus know what he should know and what he should do. And he silenced them. That's incredible. And many, many people came for healing at Capernaum. And then Jesus said to his disciples, we need a break. Let's go to Door County. Let's just drive north and spend some time along the water and the streams and in the fields and the lovely colors of the fall season. They went to a place called Caesarea Philippi near the headwaters of the Jordan River. My wife and I have been there. It's incredible. It's a place you want to go and pitch a tent and cast your line. Just kind of hang out, build a campfire. It's an amazing place. Hills come down there, shrines and temples all around. Many people went there on a religious retreat at that time. And there Jesus poses a few questions. Many, I'm sure. And the first one sets them up for the second. And the first one was, as you mix and mingle with all the people coming to town, who do people say that I am? And they began to think a bit academically. Well, some say you're John the Baptist. Doesn't make any sense, but some think you're John the Baptist, kind of brought back to life, and John is your cousin, so you couldn't be John, but people think you're John the Baptist. Some think you're Elijah, the great prophet who didn't die a physical death, went up in the clouds of heaven, that kind of thing. Will come again one day in the chariots of fire, but some people say you're he, or at least a great prophet. Then Jesus asks another question. And this is the one that Peter was waiting for. I taught third and fourth grade for about 5 years before I went into ministry 30 years ago. I still see children who know the answer and their hand pops up so quickly. And Jesus said, but who do you say that I am? And Peter just jumped out of his sandals. And he said, you are the Christ. You are the Son of the living God. And Jesus must have just smiled, because finally someone got it. And he said to Peter, you know, no one told you that. No man, no woman, only the Spirit of God. And sometimes sermons are preached on that very text. It's really important that a part of the work of the church is to help every man, woman, and child within this entire region around your church in some way, shape, or form convey to every living being that Jesus Christ is God, Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of the Father. Philippians chapter 2, verse 11 says, every knee shall bow, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Every knee, not some knees, every knee, every individual, not some individuals, every individual. Theologically, I can have a field day with that. And how that happens, I don't know. But a part of the church is that. But there's more within this incredible text. Then Jesus says, Peter, I call you Peter now, rock, upon the foundation of that which you have said, upon the foundation of that which you know to be so true, we build the church. We build the church. So Jesus had this incredible sense that we will build together what is so needed around this globe. Even in Door County, along this incredible bay, maybe the most lovely setting for a church and the Moravian Church of any settings I have been to, although Lake Auburn in Minnesota would challenge that, but you're darn close. We need to build this thing called the church. Why? Why? Why do we need to build this place called church? Why is a probing question that Jesus knows these disciples are asking, and Jesus has an answer to the question. Hear it carefully. Again, I'll let you know when that simple sentence is to walk out the door with. I'll let you know when it's coming. Jesus said that the gates of hell don't prevail. That all the yucky stuff that happens in life doesn't win. A grandchild who has cancer. Those who fight in the military on every land, not just our troops, but troops that defend and protect. And those who try and do that which they've done, and they'll try again in some way, shape, or form. We live in a world where hell oftentimes wins, where the darkness wins. If I may give three brief illustrations of what I mean. You may remember some years ago, not that long ago, probably 3 or 4 years ago, in Chile, 33 men were in a mine for a number of days because of a collapse. Pennsylvania was really involved with that because an engineering company in eastern Pennsylvania helped to create. However, they went down there and got these guys out. It's amazing. Most miners, when they have this happen, they know it's over. I mean, this is it. This is it. But somehow, these guys didn't die. Somehow, in the midst of their darkness, light shone. But what impressed me the most was the church. They called it Camp Hope. You may have read about Camp Hope. On the surface of the ground, there were people like you who gathered at the top, and as they would bore a hole down and send messages, what they said is, even in the midst of your darkness, we bring you light. Even if you die, you shall not die. You'll be in the presence of God where there is eternal light. Hell will not win. Live or die, hell doesn't win. And men down there, many, came to a profound sense of faith because of that which these people did on the surface. And they were just the church. They were the church. One person said, God wrestled with Satan and God won. All around you, in this incredible, lovely, affluent area of Door County, I underline affluence. People don't live here generally unless they have some means to live here. We know that. But even amidst the decadence, which is some a bit of what Door County is in some ways, not bad, that's reality, that's okay. Even amidst this reality of having all kinds of opportunity, there are people living in some sense of darkness. It isn't a mine hole a half mile deep. But people all around here, they may not be sharing it, you may not see it, but there's something they're involved in that is simply not easy. There's a darkness, if you will. And Jesus says, church, your task is to shed light upon those who live in any kind of darkness, that the hell they may experience day in and day out is not what wins, but that light of the love of Jesus Christ, which Jesus made clear to Peter is the essence of what it means to be church. Some years ago, I was in a church in Pennsylvania, and it was Ash Wednesday, and we were just finishing the service, and I finished my message on that Sunday or on that Wednesday evening, and there was a gentleman sitting over here, kind of by himself. His wife was there too, and you could tell from the beginning of the service he simply wanted to share something. And sure enough, at the end of the service, he raised his hand and he said, do you mind if I come up? We all knew who he was. I knew him pretty well. But we're so polite. I mean, we're just polite people. And no one ever talked about his own struggle, his own darkness. It was his son, who was about 15 years old at the time, who was making some really lousy choices, getting deeper into trouble. And the church is kind of there, kind of, but we don't want to, you know, just invade people's privacy. He came up and he said these words. He just took the microphone and he said, you all know me, you know my family, you know my kid. He said this, I won't forget these words. He said, church, I need you today to be church. I need it. My kid's making lousy choices and he's not doing what he should do. We all know that. He's just a good boy at heart, but he's just turned. And I need you to be church because I don't want to have my kid die. The elders gathered then in a moment, which is not common for elders in Moravian churches, by the way. We gathered those of us who were there. His wife and he came up. We prayed for them, laid hands on them. The next Sunday, their son came to church, sat rows behind them. And I won't forget this. At the time when you have people get up and say hello when you greet each other, Earl, mid-70s, I guess, turned around and saw this boy back there. And the boy had long, greasy black hair, a dirty old pea coat. And Earl walked over to him, and Earl put his arms around him, and he brought him into his chest. Earl gave him this bear hug this kid will never forget. Never forget. What Earl said with no words was, you're not going to die on our watch. You're not going to die on our watch. You were baptized here. You confirmed your faith here. You may get married here. You don't die on our watch. And people saw him do that. Most folk didn't know what to say. What do you do? Don't say a thing. Earl was the church, just brought this kid into him. Today, this kid is 27 years old, married, he's happy, he's clean, got a lovely wife. I know his parents, they hope to be grandparents someday also, not yet. That's the church. I was in Edmonton last week at a couple of Moravian churches there, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And you may have heard about this incredible story about a young girl who killed herself, 15 years old, a victim of bullying. In British Columbia, and she posted some pictures on YouTube. There are several, and one here is in this paper, I have nobody, I need somebody. Here's a kid 15 years old screaming for help on YouTube. on YouTube. I'm not sure who responded, but it wasn't many because she died the next day. All around the community, amidst this lovely fall day and this lovely fall season when people are walking the shores and walking their dogs and sipping tea and having a great time, you got people who are simply locked in a darkness, which is incredible. In your school, there's no doubt about it, there are kids who succumb to alcohol and drugs and loneliness. Last story. Then I'll get to my one sentence I want to have you leave with, okay? You'll hear it really clearly in a moment. I was in Minnesota, my first church. Got a 2 a.m. phone call. Don't you hate 2 a.m. phone calls? I mean, they're just, you know, Hillary Clinton knows what they may mean, you know, and we talked to her about that 4 years ago. But for clergy, it's never really good. And I got a phone call to come to the nursing home to see Mr. Smith. And I didn't know Mr. Smith. And the nurse said, I know, but he knows you. He sees you walk by the room now and again. And would you just come and talk to Mr. Smith? I said, well, yeah, okay. And I got dressed and I went over there. And the doors open. Mr. Smith was there, kind of a grumpy old guy. Had his room by himself. And he said, I walked to the door and he said, sit down and close the door with that kind of tone. I did. He asked me a question, kind of a why question. He said, can God forgive someone like me? I said, yes. He said, don't give me any of your theological, you can guess the word, all right? He said, can God even forgive someone like me? I was raised Catholic. And I said, do you need to confess? He did. He talked for a good 35, 45 minutes about his life. And I'm not an evangelist at heart, not at all. I don't think in those terms. I'm a good nurturer and the teacher, that kind of thing. But on that night, he introduced this man to the Jesus we're reading about in Scripture, who said to the disciples, we can't let the gates of hell win. That's what the church is all about. And I prayed with him and for him. He didn't say a word when I left. He had this remarkable look on his face, a little tear in his eye kind of thing, and I walked out the door. I got a phone call at 11 o'clock that morning. He had died. You know, I had no responsibility, nothing else to do. My job was done. But I tell you what, and I'm not looking forward to this, but kind of I am, that when I cross that threshold one day from this life to the next, I bet you dollars to donuts, Mr. Smith will be there with his hand out saying, man, I thank you so much. And he lived most of his life in a darkness that he just couldn't be forgiven for the stuff he had done. I thought, where was the church? Where was I? I walked by his room 1,000 times. Not one time did I knock on this guy's door. Not one time did I say, is there anybody in this institution who has no visitors at all, who's all alone, you know, who hasn't seen a pastor or a friend in ages? I never asked that question. That angers me about me, to be honest. Kind of a busy church, you know, doing great stuff, doing good things, coming and going. But all around us are people who, here's my point that I want to have you think about over the course of the rest of the day, the why behind it all, the reason you build accesses, the reason you say, this church is not an open door. We say it is, easy words to say, aren't they? It's more. It's more, it's more. It's the essence of why you are contributing as you have, why you're committing today or by today. You'll send in your commitment form, and if you haven't, do it. Make a statement to your church and God, I'm going to be held accountable. I'm putting my name on the dotted line. If you died for me, Jesus, at least I can let you know